grabbed Jeff from Kisa. He gripped the boy's shoulders with both black-gloved hands. His fingers were longer than they should have been, as though they had an extra joint. Against the white of Jeff's jacket, you could tell that the index finger was as long as the middle finger. Another myth that was true, at least for Janos. Those long, strange fingers dug into Jeff just a little. Jeff's eyes were so wide it looked painful. "What's going on?" I asked. Kisa was dressed in the same black vinyl outfit she'd had on in the torture room, though it couldn't be the exact same one, because the first one had Larry's bullet hole in it. She stood beside him, her hands in fists. She stood very still, as only the dead can, but there was a tension to her, a wariness. She wasn't happy. Her dark skin was strangely pale. She hadn't fed yet tonight. I could always tell. With most vampires. There are always exceptions. Xavier moved in a shadow of that impossible blurring speed past Sterling to stand beside the still unconscious Miss Harrison. Larry shook his head.
Did he just appear there, or did I see him move?
He moved, I said. I expected Janos to send Kisa out to join the others, but he didn't. A figure crawled over the lip of the hill, dragging itself into sight like it hurt to move. Pale hands dug into the naked dirt, pale arms bare to the spring night. The head drooped toward the ground, short dark hair hiding the face. With one upward motion, the face raised into the moonlight. Thin, bloodless lips drew back from fangs. The face was ravaged with hunger. I knew the eyes were brown only because I'd seen them staring lifelessly at the ceiling of Ellie Quinlan's bedroom. There was no pull to her eyes, but down in the dark depths, a flicker of something burned. It wasn't sanity. Hunger, maybe. An animal's emotion, nothing human. Maybe after they'd let her feed for the first time, she'd have time for emotions. Now, everything had narrowed down to one basic need.
"Is that who I think it is?" Larry asked.
"Yeah," I said. Jeff tried to run to her. "Ellie!" Janos jerked him tight against his chest, one arm around his shoulders like an embrace. Jeff struggled against that arm, tried to run to his dead sister. I was with Janos on this one. The newly risen have a tendency to eat first and ask questions later. The thing that had once been Ellie Quinlan would have gladly torn out her baby brother's throat. She'd have bathed in the blood, and minutes or days or weeks later she would realize what she'd done. She might even regret it.
"Go, Angela. Go to Xavier," Janos said.
"A new name won't change who she was," I said. Janos looked at me.
"She is 2 years dead, and her name is Angela."
"Her name is Ellie," Jeff said. He'd stopped struggling, but he looked at his dead sister with fresh horror, as if just beginning to really see her. "People will recognize her, Janos."
"We shall be careful, Anita. Our new angel will see no one that we do not wish."
"Well, isn't that cozy?" I said.
"It will be," he said,
"once she has drunk her fill."
"I'm impressed that you dragged her this far without feeding her first."
"I did it."
Xavier's voice was surprisingly pleasant. It was disturbing hearing that voice coming from that pale, ghostly face. I looked at him, careful to avoid his gaze. "Impressive," I said.
"Andy brought her over, and I brought Andy over. I am her master."
Since Andy hadn't shown up, I was betting I'd killed him in the woods with Sheriff St. John. Probably not a good time to bring that up. "And who is your master?"
"Serafina, for now,"
Xavier said. I glanced at Janos.
"You haven't worked out which of you is top dog, have you?"
I smiled.
"You waste our time, Anita. Our master awaits you eagerly. Let us finish this. Call our angel."
Xavier held out one pale hand. Ellie made a noise low in her throat and scrambled on all fours over the raw dirt. The long black dress tangled around her legs. She tore at it impatiently. The cloth ripped like paper in her hands, the skirt shredding around her bare legs. She grabbed Xavier's hand like it was a lifeline. She bent over his wrist, and only his hand in her hair kept her from trying to feed on him.
"There is no sustenance for you from the dead, Angela," Janos said. feed on the living.
Pallas and Bettina knelt on either side of Sterling. Xavier fell gracefully beside Ms. Harrison, his black cape spread out around him like a pool of blood. He kept hold of Ellie's hair the whole way down, forcing her snarling face to touch the dirt. Her hands dug at his hands, mewling sounds crawling from her throat. Nothing that was human should have made sounds like that.
"Ms. Blake," Sterling said. "You are the law. You have to protect me."
"I thought you were going to see me in court, Raymond. Something about me attacking you and Miss Harrison with zombies?"
"I didn't mean it."
He glanced up at the kneeling vampires, then back to me.
"I won't tell. I won't tell anyone, please."
I just looked at him. "Begging for mercy, Raymond?"
"Yes, yes, I'm begging."
"Like the mercy you showed Bayard?"
"Please."
Bettina caressed Sterling's cheek. He jerked like it had burned.
"Please."
"Shit. We can't just watch," Larry said. "You have another suggestion?" "You never give anyone over to the monsters, not for any reason. It's a rule," he said.
"It was my rule.
I believed in it once, back when I'd been sure who the monsters were." He was pulling the chain out from inside his shirt.
"Don't do this, Larry. Don't get us killed for Raymond Sterling."
His cross spilled out in the open air. It glowed like Serafina's eyes. He just looked at me. I sighed and brought out my own cross.
"This is a bad idea."
"I know," he said. "But I can't just watch." I stared at his earnest face and knew it was true. He couldn't just watch. I could have. I might not have enjoyed it, but I could have let it happen. More's the pity.
"What are you doing with your little holy objects?"
Janos asked. "Stopping this," I said.
"You want them dead, Anita."
"Not like this," I said.
"Would you have let me use your gun and waste all this blood?"
He was offering to let me shoot them. I shook my head. "I don't think that's an option anymore."
"It was never an option," Larry said.
I let that go. No need to disillusion him. I walked towards Pallas and Bettina. Larry walked towards Ellie and Xavier, cross held outward to the length of its chain, as if that made it work better. Nothing wrong with a little dramatic gesture, but I'd have to clue him in that it didn't really help. But later. The cross's glow grew until it was like wearing a 100-watt light bulb naked around your neck. I saw the world as a black circle outside the glow. Xavier was on his feet facing Larry, but the others had crawled away from their prey, beaten by the light.
"Thank you, Ms. Blake," Sterling said. "Thank you."
He grabbed my leg with his good hand, fawning over me. I fought an urge to shake him off. "Thank Larry. I'd have let you die." He didn't seem to hear me. He was nearly crying with relief, slobbering all over my Nikes.
"Back away from them, please."
The voice was female and honey thick. I blinked over the glow of the cross and saw Kisa holding a gun, a revolver that looked like a magnum, hard to tell in the glow. Whatever it was, it'd make a big hole.
"Move away from them, now."
I thought Serafina didn't want me dead.
"Kisa will shoot your young friend."
I stopped in mid-breath and let it out. "If you kill him, I won't cooperate with whatever you have in mind for tonight."
"You misunderstand us, Anita," Janos said. "My master does not require your cooperation. Everything she wants from you can be taken by force."
I stared at him over the shining light. He had Jeff cuddled against him, most heartwarming.
"Take off your crosses and throw them far out into the trees," Janos said.
He ran a gloved hand along both sides of Jeff's face, planting a kiss on his cheek.
"Now that we know you would give up your safety for both young men, we have one more hostage than is absolutely necessary."
He put his hands on either side of Jeff's neck, just holding, not hurting. Not yet.
"Take off your crosses and throw them into the woods. I will not ask a third time."
I stared at him. I didn't want to give up my cross. I glanced at Larry. He was still facing off against Xavier, his cross glowing bravely.
Shit.
"Kisa, shoot the man."
"No," I said. I undid the chain.
"Don't shoot him."
"Don't do it, Anita," Larry said.
I can't watch them shoot you, not if I can stop it. I let the chain pool in my hand. The cross shone with a blue-white flame like burning magnesium. It was a bad idea to throw it away. A real bad idea. I tossed it into the woods. The cross glittered like a falling star and died out of sight in the dark.
Now your cross, Larry,
Yano said. Larry shook his head.
You'll have to shoot me.
We'll shoot the boy, Yano said. Or perhaps I'll feed upon him while you watch.
He pinned Jeff against himself with one arm, while his other hand dug into the boy's hair, holding him immobile, neck exposed. Larry looked at me.
What do I do, Anita?
You have to decide this one for yourself, I said.
They'll really kill him, won't they?
Yeah,
they will.
He cursed under his breath and let the cross fall against his chest. He undid the chain and threw it out into the woods with a lot of force to it, as if he could throw his anger with it. When the light from his cross died away, we stood there in the darkness. The moonlight that had seemed so bright before was a dim substitute. My night vision returned in stages. Kisa stepped closer, the gun still pointed at us. The first time I'd seen her, she had exuded sexuality, power. Now she was docile, quiet, as though some of her power had been drained away. She looked pale and drawn. She needed to feed.
Why haven't they let you feed tonight? I asked.
Our master is not 100% sure of Kisa's loyalty. It needed testing, didn't it, my dark beauty?
Kisa didn't answer. She stared at me with large, dark eyes, but the gun never wavered.
Feed, children. Feed.
Pallas and Bettina walked over to Sterling. They stared at me over him. I stared back. Sterling grabbed my leg.
You can't let them have me. Please, please.
Pallas knelt by him. Bettina walked around to the side I was on. She pulled Sterling's hand off my leg. The vampire's lower back brushed my legs. I took a step back, and Sterling started screaming. Xavier and Ellie had already started to feed on the blessedly unconscious Miss Harrison. Larry looked at me, hands out, empty, helpless. I didn't know what to say.
Don't touch me! Don't touch me!
Sterling batted at Pallas with his good hand, and the vampire caught it easily, held it. At least put him under, I said. Pallas looked up at me.
After he tried to kill you? Why show him mercy?
Maybe I don't want to hear him scream. Pallas smiled. Her eyes flashed dark fire.
For you, Anita? Anything.
She grabbed Sterling's chin, forcing him to meet her gaze.
Miss Blake, help me. Help!
The words died in his mouth. I watched everything slide out of his eyes until they were empty and waiting.
Come to me, Raymond, Pallas said. Come to me.
Sterling sat up, his one good arm embracing the vampire. He tried to use the broken arm, but it wouldn't bend at the elbow. Bettina bent the broken arm backward and forward, laughing. Sterling never reacted to the pain. He snuggled against Pallas. The look on his face was one of happiness, joy, eagerness. Pallas sank fangs into his neck. Sterling spasmed for a second, then relaxed and began making soft noises in his throat. Pallas moved Sterling's head to one side, sucking on the wound but leaving enough room on the other side for someone else. Bettina sank fangs into the exposed flesh. The two vampires fed, heads so close together their hair mingled, gold and black. And Raymond Sterling made happy noises while they killed him. Larry walked away to the edge of the clearing, hugging his arms tight across his chest. I stayed where I was. I watched. I had wanted Sterling dead. It would be cowardly to look away. Besides, I should have to watch. I needed to remember who the monsters were. Maybe if I forced myself not to look away, not to blink, I wouldn't forget again. I stared at Sterling's happy, eager face until his arm dropped away from Pallas's back and his eyes closed. He passed out from blood loss and shock, and the vampires hugged him tight and fed. His eyes flew open wide, and a gurgling sound crawled out of his throat. Fear screamed out of his eyes. Pallas raised a hand and stroked Sterling's hair. a gesture you'd use on a frightened child. The fear died out of his eyes, and I watched the last light die with it. I watched Raymond Sterling die, and knew I would remember that last look of terror in my dreams for weeks to come. Chapter 37. There was a rush of wind that raised a fine cloud of dirt. Jean-Claude appeared as if conjured from the air itself. I had never been so happy to see him. I didn't run to his arms, but I moved to stand near him. Larry followed me. Jean-Claude wasn't always the safest refuge, but right now he looked pretty damn good. He was dressed in one of his white shirts. This one had so much lace on the front it looked fluffy. A short white jacket hit him just at the waist. More lace peeked from the sleeves of the jacket. He wore tight white pants with a black belt. The belt matched his velvet black boots.
"I did not expect you here, Jean-Claude," Yano said.
I couldn't tell for sure, but he sounded surprised. Goody.
"Serafina delivered her invitation in person, Yanos. But it was not enough."
"You surprise me, Jean-Claude," he said.
"I surprised Serafina as well."
He sounded terribly calm. If he was afraid standing outnumbered on the hilltop, it didn't show. I'd have loved to know how he'd surprised Serafina. Jason walked up the far side of the hill, from the direction of the jeep. He wore black leather pants that looked like they'd been poured on him, short black boots, and no shirt. There was what looked like a silver-studded dog collar around his neck, and a black glove on either hand, but other than that he was naked from the waist up. I hoped Jason had chosen his own outfit for tonight. The right side of his face was bruised from chin to forehead, as though something large had hit him.
"I see your pet joined the struggle," Yano said.
"He is mine in every way, Yanos. They are all mine."
Just this once I let it go. If my choice was belonging to Jean-Claude or to Serafina, I knew what my vote would be. Larry moved so close to me that I could have taken his hand. Maybe he didn't like being included in Jean-Claude's menagerie.
"You have lost that air of humbleness that I found so appealing, Jean-Claude. Have you refused Serafina's invitation altogether?"
"I will come to Serafina's party, but on my own, with my people around me."
I glanced at him. Was he crazy? He frowned.
"Serafina wanted you at the party in chains."
"We can all live with this choice, Yanos."
"Are you saying you would challenge us all here and now?"
There was an edge of laughter in his voice.
"I will not die alone, Yanos. In the end you may have me, but it will cost you dearly."
"If you will truly come of your own free will, then come," Yanos said. "Our master calls us. Let us answer that call."
Yanos, Bettina, and Pallas were just suddenly airborne. It wasn't flying, or levitation. I had no word for it. Larry whispered,
"Dear God."
The first time you see a vampire fly is a red-letter night. The others scattered into the trees in that blurring motion that made them disappear almost as fast as flying. Ellie Quinlan had vanished with the rest of them. Her brother had been carried away by Yanos. Until that moment, I hadn't known a vampire could carry more than its own body weight while flying. Learned something new every night. We found our guns and walked down the mountainside. Our crosses were well and truly lost. Even Jean-Claude walked, and I knew he had other methods of transportation. Was it considered impolite to fly when others couldn't? The jeep was still where I'd parked it. The night was still thick. It was hours until dawn, and I just wanted to go home.
"I took the liberty of choosing clothes for you to wear tonight," Jean-Claude said. "They are in the jeep."
"I locked the jeep," I said. He just smiled at me. I sighed. "Fine." When I tried the handle, it was unlocked. Clothes were folded in the passenger seat. They were black leather. I shook my head. "I don't think so."
"Your clothes, ma petite, are on the driver's side. Those are Lawrence's clothes."
Larry peered over my shoulder. "You've got to be kidding." I walked around the jeep and found a clean pair of black jeans, the tightest pair I owned. A blood-red tank top that I didn't remember buying. It felt like silk. There was a black duster coat that I had never seen. When I tried it for length, it hit me at mid-calf and billowed cape-like when I moved. I liked the coat. The silk blouse I could have done without.
Not bad, I said.
Mine is bad, Larry said. I don't even know how to get into these pants.
Jason, help him dress.
Jason picked up the bundle of leather and carried them to the back of the jeep. Larry followed him but didn't look happy. No boots? I said. Jean-Claude smiled.
I didn't think you would give up your jogging shoes.
Damn straight.
Change quickly, ma petite. We must arrive at Serafina's before she decides to kill the boy just for spite.
Would Xavier let her kill his new toy?
If she is truly his master, he has no choice. Now dress, ma petite, quickly.
I walked towards the far side of the jeep, but that brought me within earshot and nearly eyesight of Larry. I stopped and sighed. Oh, what the hell. I turned my back on Jean-Claude and slid out of my shoulder holster.
How did you guys get away from Serafina?
I slipped my shirt over my head. I fought the urge to look back. I knew Jean-Claude was watching. Why check?
Jason jumped her at a crucial moment. It was distraction enough for us to flee, but little else.
I'm afraid the room is something of a mess.
His voice was so mild I had to see his face. I slid the red tank top on and turned. He was standing closer than I'd thought, nearly within touching distance. He stood there in his white clothes, spotless and perfect. Step a few paces back, please. I'd like a little privacy. He smiled, but he did what I asked. A first. Had she underestimated you that badly? I asked. I changed jeans as quickly as I could. I tried not to think of him watching. It was too embarrassing.
I was forced to flee, ma petite. Janos calls her master, and he defeated me. I cannot stand against her, not in a fair fight.
I slipped the shoulder holster back on, threading the belt I'd been wearing back through it. The straps chafed a little with no sleeves, but it was better than not having it. I got the Firestar from under my seat and tucked the inner pants holster down the front of my jeans. It would show, even with the duster. I finally put it at the small of my back, though it wasn't my first or even second choice of places. I got the silver knives out of the glove compartment and strapped them to my forearms. I also got out a small box. It held two extra crosses. Vampires seemed to always be taking them from me. Jean-Claude watched it all with interest. His dark eyes followed my hands like he was memorizing the movements. I put the duster on and walked a few steps to get the feel of everything. I drew both knives just to make sure the coat sleeves weren't too tight. I drew both guns and still didn't like the Firestar. I finally shifted the inner pants holster to one side. It dug into my side hard enough to bruise, but I could draw it in a reasonable time. That was more important than comfort tonight. I slipped an extra clip for both guns in the coat pockets. They were loaded with non-silver bullets. It made me nervous to only have the silver bullets that were in the guns, but Raw Head and Bloody Bones was going to make his appearance sometime tonight. Magnus might even be there. I wanted ammo for everything I'd meet tonight. Larry came out from behind the jeep. I bit my lip to keep from laughing. It wasn't that he looked bad, he just looked so uncomfortable. He seemed to have trouble walking in the black leather pants. Just walk naturally, Jason said.
I can't, Larry said.
He had a silk tank top that was the twin of mine, except it was blue instead of red. He had short black boots on. The black jacket he'd borrowed from Jason last night completed the outfit. I looked at the boots.
Black jogging shoes, perhaps, ma petite, but white jogging shoes with black leather?
I do not think so.
I feel ridiculous, Larry said. How can you wear this all the time?
I like leather, Jason said.
We must be off, Jean-Claude said. Anita, if you would drive?
I thought you might want to fly, I said.
It is important we arrive together, he said.
Larry and I added salt to our pockets. With the extra ammo clips in one pocket and salt in the other, my coat hung a little crooked, but hey, we weren't going to a fashion show. We all slid into the jeep. There was a lot of protesting from the back seat.
These pants are even more uncomfortable sitting down.
I will remember your dislike of leather in the future, Lawrence.
My name is Larry.
I drove the jeep down the rutted road that led out of the construction site. Serafina wants to be immortal. I turned onto the main road and headed back towards Branson, though of course we'd be stopping at Serafina's on the way. Jean-Claude turned in his seat to stare at me.
What are you saying, ma petite?
I told him. I told him about Raw Head and Bloody Bones and Serafina's plan. She's mad.
Not entirely, ma petite. It might not give her immortality, but it would give her undreamt-of power. The question remaining is, how did Serafina grow powerful enough to snag Janos before she fed off Magnus and Bloody Bones?
What do you mean?
Janos was in the old country. He would not have left voluntarily. He followed her. Where did she get the power to subjugate him?
Maybe Magnus isn't the first fairy she's fed off, I said.
Perhaps, he said. Or perhaps she has found other food.
What other food?
That, ma petite, is the question that I would very much like answered.
Thinking of changing diets? I asked.
Power is always tempting, ma petite, but for tonight I was thinking of more practical matters. If we can discover her source of power, we might be able to undo it.
How? He shook his head.
I do not know, but unless we can find some trick to pull out of our hats tonight, ma petite, we are doomed.
He sounded remarkably calm about it. I wasn't calm. My pulse was thundering so fast I could feel it in my throat and wrists, hear it like a rushing in my ears. Doomed. It had a bad ring to it. With Serafina waiting at the other end, it had a very bad ring to it indeed. Chapter 38. We walked up the stone steps to the porch. Moonlight and soft darkness filled the porch. There were no thick, unnatural shadows, no hint of what lay inside. It was just an abandoned house, nothing special. The nervous flutter in my stomach didn't buy it either. Kisa opened the door. Candlelight spilled behind her from the open door to the far room. No pretense tonight that the empty room was all there was. Sweat beaded on her face, golden drops in the warm light. She was still being punished. I wondered why, but it wasn't my biggest problem. Kisa led us through that open door without a word. Serafina sat on her throne in the corner of the big room. She was dressed in a white ball gown like Cinderella, her hair piled atop her head. Diamonds like a string of fire glimmered in her hair as she nodded her greeting. Magnus was curled at her feet in a white tux and tails. Gloves, a white top hat, and a cane were laid next to his knees. His long chestnut hair was the only color in the picture. Every master vamp I'd ever met had been into dramatic presentation. Janos and his two females stood in black behind the throne, like a living curtain of darkness. Ellie lay on her side on the cushions, looking almost alive. Even in her torn and stained black dress she looked content, like a cat that was full of cream. Her eyes sparkled, lips curled with a secret smile. Ellie, alias Angela, was enjoying being undead. So far. Kisa stalked to them and knelt on the side away from Magnus. Her black leather blended with Janos's cloak. Serafina stroked Kisa's sweating face with a white-gloved hand. Serafina smiled, and it was lovely until you glimpsed her eyes. They glowed with a pale phosphorescence. You could still get a hint of pupil, but it was sinking fast. Her eyes matched her dress. Now that was color coordinating. Jeff and Xavier were missing. I didn't like that. I opened my mouth to ask, and Jean-Claude looked at me. For just this once, the look was enough. He was the master. I was playing servant. Fine. As long as he asked the right questions.
We have come, Serafina, Jean-Claude said. Give us the boy, and we will leave you in peace.
She laughed.
But I will not leave you in peace, Jean-Claude.
She turned her softly glowing eyes to me. It was like being looked at by twin flashlights, and just as human.
Ninya, I am so happy to see you.
I stopped breathing for a second.
Ninya?
It had been my mother's nickname for me. Something flared in her eyes, like a distant glimpse of fire. Then the light banked back to a cool, wavering light. She wasn't trying to capture me with her eyes. Why? Because she was that sure of me. My skin suddenly went cold. That was it. I would have said it was arrogance, but I believed it. She offered something better than sex, more fulfilling than power. Home. Lie or not, it was a good offer. Larry touched my hand.
You're shaking.
I swallowed hard. Never admit how scared you are out loud, Larry. Ruins the effect.
Sorry.
I stepped away from him. No sense in huddling. I glanced at Jean-Claude, sort of silently asking if I was about to break vampire protocol.
She has acknowledged you as she would another master. Answer as one.
He didn't seem bothered by that. I was. What do you want, Serafina? I asked. She stood, gliding across the carpeted floor. It looked like whatever was under that full skirt wasn't legs. Feet just didn't move like that. Maybe she was levitating. However she managed it, she kept coming closer. I wanted desperately to back away. I didn't want her close to me. Larry moved a step behind me. Jason moved a step up to Jean-Claude's other side. I stood my ground. It was the best I could do. Something flickered in her eyes, like a distant glimpse of movement through a fringe of trees. Eyes didn't do that. I looked away and realized I didn't remember looking at her eyes. So how was I looking away? I felt her move towards me. Her gloved hand came into view. I jerked back and looked up at the same time. I barely glanced at her face, but it was enough. Her eyes had fire burning down a long, dark tunnel, as if the inside of her head fell away into an impossible darkness, and some small creatures had lit a fire against that darkness. I could warm my hands by that flame forever. I screamed and covered my eyes with my hands. A hand touched my shoulder. I jerked away and screamed again.
Ma petite, I am here.
Then do something, I said.
I am, he said.
I will have this one by sunrise.
She motioned to me. She took a gliding step towards Jason. She caressed her gloved hand down his bare chest. He stood there and took it. I wouldn't have let her touch me on a dare.
I will give you to Bettina and Pallas. They will teach you to enjoy rotting flesh.
Jason stared straight ahead, but his eyes widened just a little. Bettina and Pallas had moved from behind the throne to stand a few feet behind Serafina. Dramatic gestures are us.
Or perhaps I will force you to change into wolf form until it becomes more natural than this human shell.
She slid a finger under the collar on his throat.
I will chain you to my wall, and you will be my guard dog.
Enough of this, Serafina, Jean-Claude said. The night bleeds away. These petty torments are beneath one of your power.
I am feeling petty tonight, Jean-Claude, and soon I will have the power to be as petty as I feel.
She glanced at Larry.
He will join my flock.
She stared up at Jean-Claude. I hadn't realized he was taller.
And you, my lovely catamount, will serve us for all eternity.
Jean-Claude stared down at her, utterly arrogant.
I am master of the city now, Serafina. We cannot torture each other. We cannot steal each other's possessions, no matter how attractive they are.
It took me a second to realize the possessions he was referring to were us. Serafina smiled.
I will have your businesses, your money, your lands, and your people before the night is out. Did the council really think I would be content with the crumbs from your table?
If she challenged him officially, we were all dead. Jean-Claude couldn't take her, and neither could I. Distraction. We needed a distraction. You're wearing enough diamonds to buy your own businesses, your own house. She turned those glowing eyes to me, and I half wished I had kept quiet.
Do you think I live in this house because I cannot afford better?
I don't know. She glided back to her throne and settled onto it, smoothing her skirts.
I do not trust your human laws. I will remain the secret we have always been. Let others walk in the spotlight. I will be here when such modern thinkers are no more.
She suddenly slashed out with one hand. Jean-Claude staggered. Blood flew from his face, splattering on his white shirt and jacket in bright crimson flecks. Drops of it clung to my hair and cheek. She slashed again, and another cut exploded on the other side of his face, splashing Jason with Jean-Claude's blood. Jean-Claude stayed on his feet. He never cried out. He didn't touch the wounds. He stood there, utterly still. Except for the blood, there was no movement to him. His eyes were drowning pools of sapphire floating in a mask of blood. Naked muscle twitched in his cheek. Bone glistened at jaw and cheek. It was a frighteningly deep wound. But I knew he could heal it. Horrible as it looked, it was a scare tactic. I kept telling that to the pounding of my heart. I wanted to go for a gun, to shoot the bitch. But I couldn't shoot them all. I wasn't even sure Janos could be shot.
I don't have to kill you, Jean-Claude. Hot metal in your wounds and they'll be permanent. Your beautiful face ravaged for all time. You can still pretend to be master of the city, but I will rule. You will be my puppet.
Say the word, Serafina,
Jean-Claude said.
Say it and be done with these games.
His voice was bland, as normal as it ever was. His voice gave nothing away, not pain or fear or terror.
Challenge. Is that the word you want to hear, Jean-Claude?
It will do.
His power crawled over my skin like cool fire. The power lashed out suddenly. I felt it sweep past me like a giant fist. It slammed into Serafina, scattering the air currents. Kisa caught the edge of it and fell back from the throne, thrown nearly prone among the cushions. Serafina threw back her head and laughed. The laughter died in mid-motion, gone like it had never been. Her face was a mask with eyes of white fire. Her skin seemed to grow paler, whiter, until it was like translucent marble. Veins showed under her skin like lines of blue flame. Her power flowed through the room like rising water, deeper and deeper until when she released it we would all be drowned. "Where are your ghosts, Serafina?" I asked. I thought for a second she would ignore me, but that mask-like face turned slowly, slowly towards me. "Where are your ghosts?" Even though she was looking straight at me, I couldn't tell if she heard. It was like trying to read the face of an animal. No, the face of a statue. There was no one home. Can't control bloody bones and your ghosts at the same time? Is that it? Did you have to give up one of them? Serafina rose to her feet, and I knew she was floating, rising on tiny currents of her own power to hover above the cushions. She floated slowly upward towards the ceiling, and it was impressive. I was babbling, trying to buy time, but time for what? What the hell could we do? A voice echoed in my head.
Crosses, ma petite. Do not be bashful on my account.
I didn't argue or hesitate. The cross spilled out of my shirt in a ball of light so bright it was painful. I squinted and looked away, only to find Larry's cross behind me blazing to life. Jean-Claude cowered beside me, hunched away, arms shielding his face. Serafina shrieked and half fell to the floor. She could stand before a cross, but she couldn't do tricks in front of one. She landed in a heap of silken skirts. The other vamps shielded their faces, hissing. Magnus rose from the cushions. He stalked towards us. Jason stepped in front of Jean-Claude, moving to stand in front of me. He glanced at me with amber eyes. His beast stared at me over the glow of the cross and had no fear. For a heartbeat, I was glad I had silver bullets just in case. Serafina said,
"No, Magnus, not you."
Magnus hesitated, staring at Jason. A thin growl crawled out of Jason's throat.
"I can take him," Magnus said.
There was a sound from the open door to the basement. Something was coming up the stairs. Something heavy. The stairs creaked in protest. A hand came out of the darkness, large enough to palm my head. The fingernails were long and dirty, almost claw-like. Ragged clothes clung to huge, square shoulders. The thing was at least 10 feet tall. It had to bend sideways to come through the door, and when it stood, its head brushed the ceiling and you couldn't pretend it was human anymore. Its huge, oversized head had no skin. The flesh was raw and open like a wound. The veins pulsed and throbbed with blood flowing through them, but it didn't bleed. It opened a mouth full of broken yellow teeth and said,
"I am here."
It was shocking to hear words out of that mouth, that face. Its voice was like the sound at the bottom of a well, deep and rough and lost. The room suddenly seemed small. Raw head and bloody bones could have reached out one long arm and touched me, Not good. Jason had moved back a step to rejoin us. Magnus had moved back to Serafina's side. He was staring at the creature as wide-eyed as the rest of us. Had he never seen it in the flesh before?
Come to me, Serafina said.
She held out her hands to the creature, and it moved towards her, surprisingly graceful. It had a liquidness to its walk that was all wrong. Nothing that big and that ugly should move like quicksilver, but it did. In that movement, I saw Magnus and Dory. It moved like something beautiful. Serafina cradled its huge, dirty hand in her white-gloved hands. She pushed back the ragged sleeve, laying the thick, muscled wrist bare.
Stop her, ma petite.
I glanced down at Jean-Claude, who was still cowering before the cross's fire.
What? If she drinks from it, the crosses may not work against her.
I didn't question him. There was no time. I drew the Browning and felt Larry draw his gun. Serafina bent over the fairy's wrist, mouth wide, fangs glistening. I pulled the trigger. The bullet smacked into the side of her head. The force rocked her, and blood dribbled down. She could be shot. Life was good. Janos threw himself in front of her, and it was like trying to hit Superman. I pulled the trigger twice, staring at his dead-eyed face from just over a yard. He smiled at me. Silver bullets just weren't going to do it. Larry had stepped around Jean-Claude. He was firing at Pallas and Bettina. They kept coming. Kisa stayed on the floor. Ellie seemed frozen in the face of the crosses. Bloody Bones stood there like it was waiting for orders, or didn't give a damn. It was staring at Magnus like it recognized him. It was not a friendly look. Serafina's voice came from behind Janos' protective body.
Give me your wrist.
The fairy gave a ragged smile.
Soon, I will be free to kill you.
It looked at Magnus when it said it. I didn't really want something the size of a small giant mad at me, but I didn't want Serafina to have its power either. I fired into its raw head, and I might as well have spit at it. The shot did earn me a dirty look.
I have no quarrel with you,
the fairy said.
Do not make one.
Staring into its monstrous face, I agreed. But what could I do?
What'll we do?
Larry asked. He'd moved to stand nearly back to back with me. Bettina and Pallas had stopped just out of touching range, held at bay by the crosses, not the guns. Jean-Claude had gone to his knees, face cradled away from the glare of the crosses, but he didn't crawl away. He stayed within the protective touch of that light. Silver bullets wouldn't hurt the Fae, so I hit the button on the Browning and popped the clip out. I fished in my pocket for the extra clip and slid it home. I aimed at the thing's chest, where I hoped the heart was, and pulled. Bloody Bones bellowed. Blood blossomed on its ragged clothes. I knew when it felt Serafina bite into its flesh. Power whirled through the room, raising every hair on my body. For a heartbeat, I couldn't breathe. There was too much magic in the room for something as mundane as breathing. Serafina rose slowly from behind Janos' dark form. She levitated to the ceiling, bathing in the light of the crosses, smiling. The bullet wound in her head was healed. Her eyes licked white flame around her face, and I knew we were going to die. Xavier appeared in the door to the basement. He held a sword in his hands, but it was heavier, softer edged than any blade I'd ever seen. He stared at Serafina and smiled.
I have fed you,
Bloody Bones said.
Free me.
Serafina threw her hands skyward, caressing the ceiling.
No, she breathed. Never. I will drink you dry and bathe in your power.
You promised,
Bloody Bones said. She stared at him, floating. Her eyes of fire were even with his raw face.
I lied, she said.
Xavier cried, No! He tried to come closer, but the crosses kept him just out of reach. I threw a handful of salt on Serafina and Bloody Bones. She laughed at me.
What are you doing, Nina?
Never break your word to the Fae, I said.
It negates all bargains.
A sword appeared in Bloody Bones' hands, just appeared like the Fae had grabbed it out of midair. It was the one I'd seen Xavier carrying at the Quinlan's house. How many scimitars as long as my upper body could there be? He stabbed it through Serafina's chest, spitting her in midair like a butterfly. Normal steel shouldn't have touched her, but backed by the fairy's magic, it could. He pinned her to the wall, driving the hilt into her chest. He tore the sword out of her, twisting it, doing as much damage as he could. She shrieked and slid down, leaving a bloody trail on the naked wall. Bloody Bones turned back to the rest of us. It touched fingers to its bleeding chest.
I will forgive you this wound, because you freed me. When he is dead, there will be no more wounds.
He drove the sword into Magnus. The move was so quick it looked like stop action. He was as fast as Xavier. Shit. Magnus fell to his knees, mouth wide with a scream he had no breath to make. Bloody Bones drew the sword upward like he had with Seraphina, and it reminded me of the wounds that the boys had had. If Bloody Bones would help us escape Seraphina and company, I had no problem with that. But then what? It drew the sword outward, and Magnus was still alive, staring up at me. He reached out to me, and I could have let him die. Bloody Bones raised the blade back for a final blow. I pointed the Browning at it. Don't move. Until you kill him, you're mortal, and bullets can kill you. The fairy froze, staring at me.
What do you want, mortal?
You killed the boys in the woods, didn't you? Bloody Bones blinked at me.
They were wicked children.
If you get out of here, will you kill more wicked children? Bloody Bones looked at me, blinked, then said,
It is what I do. What I am.
I fired before I could think. If it moved first, I was dead. The bullet took it between the eyes. It staggered backwards, but didn't go down.
Ma petite, the crosses, or I cannot help you.
Jean-Claude's voice was a harsh whisper. I slipped the cross inside my shirt. A second later, Larry followed suit. The room was suddenly darker, colder with just the candlelight. Bloody Bones raced forward and it was just a blur. I fired into it and didn't know if I hit it or not. The sword swung out to meet me, and Jean-Claude was suddenly there, hanging onto the arm, sending it off balance. Larry moved up beside me, and we both fired into the fae's chest. It shook Jean-Claude off, sending him skittering into a wall. Larry and I stood our ground, shoulder to shoulder. I saw the sword coming like a blur of silver, and knew I couldn't get out of the way in time. Xavier was suddenly in front of me, the strange sword blocking Bloody Bones' blade. The steel blade stopped an inch from my face. Xavier's sword was notched where the steel had bitten into it. The strange sword shoved upward through Bloody Bones' chest. The fairy bellowed, slicing at Xavier, but he was in too close for the fairy's giant sword. Bloody Bones collapsed to its knees. Xavier twisted the sword as if hunting for the heart. He jerked the sword out in a wash of gore. The fairy collapsed on its stomach, shrieking. It tried to raise itself. I pressed the barrel of the Browning against its skull and fired as fast as I could. From point-blank range, you didn't need to aim. Larry moved up beside me and fired. We emptied the clips into it, and it was still breathing. Xavier drove the sword through its back, pinning it to the floor. Its chest rose and fell, struggling for air. I switched the Firestar and changed its clip to non-silver. Three shots more, and as if a critical mass had been reached, the head exploded in a rush of bone and blood and thicker, wetter things. Xavier was on its back when it blew. We stood there covered in bloody brains. Xavier drew the sword out of its back. The sword came out notched, dented from contact with bone. We stood there by the dead giant, the two of us isolated in one clear moment of understanding. The sword's cold iron, isn't it? I asked. Yes, he said. The pupils of his eyes were scarlet as a cherry, not the blood color of an albino, but truly red. Humans didn't have eyes like that. You're fae, I said. Don't be silly. The fairy can't become vampires. Everyone knows that. I stared at him and shook my head. You tampered with Magnus's spell. You did this to him. He did this to himself, Xavier said. Did you help Bloody Bones kill the teenagers, the children, or did you just give him the sword? I fed him my victims when I grew tired of them. I had 8 shots left in the Firestar. Maybe he saw the thought move behind my eyes. Neither lead nor silver bullets will harm me.
I am proof against both.
Where's Jeff Quinlan?
He's down in the basement.
Get him.
I don't think so.
And suddenly there was sound again, movement again, besides us. He'd bespelled me, and bad things had been happening while I'd been caught. Jason was coughing blood on the carpet. If he'd been human, I'd have said he was dying. Being a lycanthrope, he might live to see morning. One of the vampires had hurt him badly. I didn't know which one. Jean-Claude was lying under a pile of vampires made up of Ellie, Kisa, Bettina, and Pallas. His voice came out in a thundering yell, echoing through the room. It was impressive, but not enough.
Do not do it, ma petite.
Janos stood near the throne with Larry. They'd tied his hands behind his back with one of the cords that held the drapes. A piece of cloth was shoved in his mouth. Janos had one pale spider hand around Larry's neck. Serafina was propped up on her throne, black blood pouring out of her. I'd never seen anyone lose so much blood so quickly. Her chest was torn open so wide I had a glimpse of a frantically beating heart. "What do you want?" I asked.
"No, ma petite."
Jean-Claude struggled to move and couldn't.
"It is a trap."
"Tell me something I don't know."
"She wants you, necromancer," Janos said.
I let that sink in for a minute. "Why?"
"You have stolen her immortal blood from her. You will take its place."
"It wasn't immortal," I said. "We proved that."
"It was powerful, necromancer, as you are powerful. She will drink you up and live."
"What about me?"
"You will live forever, Anita. Forever."
I let the forever part go. I knew better.
"She will take you and kill him anyway," Jean-Claude said.
He was probably right, but what could I do? She let the girls go.
"You do not know that, ma petite. Have you seen them alive?"
He had a point.
"Necromancer."
Janos's voice jerked me back to him. Serafina lay propped on the throne beside him. Blood had drenched the white dress, turning it black, plastering it to her thin body.
"Come, necromancer," Janos said. "Come now, or the human suffers."
I started forward and Jean-Claude yelled,
"No!"
Janos slashed outward with one pale spider hand, just above Larry's body. Larry's white shirt sliced open, and blood soaked it. He couldn't scream with the gag, but if Janos hadn't held him, he'd have fallen.
"Drop all your weapons and come to us, necromancer."
"Ma petite, do not do this. I beg you."
"I have to do this, Jean-Claude. You know that."
"She knows that," he said.
I looked at him, struggling helplessly under three times his body weight in vampires. It should have been ridiculous, but it wasn't.
"She doesn't just want you for herself. She doesn't want me to have you. She will take you to spite me."
"I invited you to come play this time, remember?" I said. "It's my party." I walked towards Janos. I tried not to look behind him, not to see what else I was moving towards.
"Ma petite, don't do this. You are an acknowledged master. She cannot take you by force. You must consent. Refuse."
I just shook my head and kept going.
"Your weapons first, necromancer," Janos said.
I laid both guns on the floor. Larry was shaking his head furiously. He made little protesting noises. He struggled, falling to his knees. Janos had to release his grip on his neck to keep from strangling him.
"Now your knives," Janos said.
"I don't..."
"Do not try to lie to us here and now."
He had a point. I put the knives on the floor. My heart was hammering so hard I could barely breathe. I stopped just in front of Larry. I stared into Larry's blue eyes. I pulled out the gag, somebody's silk scarf.
"Don't do it. God, Anita, don't do it. Not for me, please."
Fresh slashes cut his shirt. More blood flowed. He gasped, but didn't scream. I looked up at Serafina. "You said this slashing only works with an aura of power."
"He has his own aura," Janos said.
"Let him go. Let them all go, and I'll do it."
"Do not do this for me, ma petite."
"I'm doing it for Larry. Doesn't cost any more to throw everybody in." Janos glanced at Serafina. She was slumped to one side, eyes half closed.
"Come to me, Anita. Let me touch your arm, and they will release them all, my word, one master to another."
"Anita, no!"
Larry struggled not to get away but to come after me. Yano slashed his hand through the air, and the sleeve of Larry's jacket flew with blood. Larry screamed. "Stop it," I said. "Stop it." I stalked towards him. "Don't touch him again. Don't ever touch him again." I spit the last words in his face, staring up into his dead eyes and feeling nothing. A hand brushed my arm, and I jerked, gasping. I'd let anger carry me those last few steps. What I was about to do scared me too much to think about it. Serafina had lost a glove. It was her bare hand that encircled my wrist, not too tight, not painful in the least. I stared at her hand on my arm and couldn't talk past the beating of my own heart.
"Release him," she said.
The minute Janos let him go, Larry tried to come to me. Janos gave him a casual slap that knocked him to the floor and sent him skidding back a couple of yards. I stayed frozen with her hand on my arm. For one awful moment I thought they'd killed him, but he moaned and tried to get back up. I glanced past Larry and met Jean-Claude's eyes. He'd been after me for years. Now here I was letting another master vamp sink her fangs into me. Serafina jerked me to my knees, squeezing the bones of my arm so hard I thought she'd broken it. The pain brought me up to meet her eyes. They were solid, perfect brown. So dark they were nearly black. Those eyes smiled at me gently. I smelled my mother's perfume, her hairspray, her skin. I shook my head. It was a lie. It was all a lie. I couldn't breathe. She knelt over me, and when her face came forward, it was my mother's thick black hair that fell against my cheek. "No, it's not real."
"It can be as real as you want it to be, Nina."
I stared up into those eyes, and I fell down the long black tunnel of her eyes. I fell towards that tiny flame. I reached towards it. It would warm my flesh, comfort my heart. It would be all things, all people, everything to me. Distant and dreamlike, I heard Jean-Claude scream my name.
"Anita!"
But it was too late. Her fire warmed me, made me feel whole. The pain was such a small price to pay. The black tunnel collapsed behind me until there was nothing but the darkness and the flicker of Serafina's eyes. Chapter 39. I dreamed. I was very small. Small enough that I fit all in my mother's lap, only my feet stuck off the edge of her knees. When she wrapped her arms around me, I was so safe, so sure that nothing could ever hurt me as long as Mommy was here. I laid my head against her chest. I could hear the beat of her heart against my ear. A strong, sure rhythm that pounded louder and louder against my face. The sound woke me. But I wasn't awake. The darkness was so complete it was like being blind. I lay in my mother's arms in the dark. I'd fallen asleep in bed with her and Dad. Her heart pounded against my ear, and the rhythm was wrong. Mommy had a heart murmur. The beat of her heart was a fraction of a second slow, a hesitation, then two quick thumps to catch up. The heart beating against my skin was as regular as a clock. I tried to raise up off her, and bumped my head against something hard and firm. My hands slid over the body that I was pinned to. I touched a satin dress with smooth jewels sewn into it. I lay there in the absolute dark and tried to roll off her. I slid into the crook of her arm. Her naked flesh slid along my bare shoulders, boneless as the dead. But her heart filled the darkness even with me struggling not to touch her. Our bodies were molded against each other. It was not a coffin built for two. Sweat broke out on my skin in a rush. The dark was suddenly chokingly close, hot. I couldn't breathe. I tried to roll onto my back, tried to roll off her, and I couldn't. There wasn't room. Every small struggle made her boneless body move, jiggling the soft, loose flesh. I couldn't smell my mother's perfume anymore. I smelled old blood and a stale, neck-ruffling smell that I'd smelled before. Vampires. I screamed and tried to do a push-up to get some distance, and the lid moved. I stayed on my arms, shoving my back into the satin and wood. The lid slammed backwards, and I was suddenly straddling her body, my upper body raised in a half-push-up. Dim light edged the lines in her face. The careful makeup looked wrong, like a badly made-up corpse. I scrambled out of the coffin, nearly falling to the floor. Serafina's coffin sat on the stage in the bloody bones bar and grill.